Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
From KQED.
Megalopolises.
Megalopoli.
I thought about that, whether it was... It should have been Megalopoli.
With our listeners, you'll hear from them if it was. This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Well, you know, it's been nearly 16 years since California voters approved a $10 billion bond measure to build a so-called bullet train connecting Los Angeles to San Francisco. Since then, well, the project has been way behind schedule and way over budget. Several scathing audits highlighting all the ways the High Speed Rail Authority has mismanaged the project. Critics love to deride the train to nowhere. That's what they call it. And they say it is really a monument to government waste. And yet, the system is being built with a section between Merced and Bakersfield scheduled to come online in the next few years.
Too often, the San Joaquin Valley has been kind of the stepchild in California. But in this instance, we are being connected with the key economic centers. Over 12,000 jobs have been created.
Today, an update on California's most criticized infrastructure project and some surprisingly positive news about where things stand today after an infusion of some $3 billion from the Biden administration. California's high-speed rail project, is it off the rails or oddly on track? Maybe somewhere in the middle. We've got an update for you. Joining me, our KQED's transportation editor, Dan Brecky, who just got off a train himself from BART from the East Bay. Hi, Dan.
That's right. My train was going a little slower, but yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. And also, Youssef Beg is with us. He's been writing about the impact of high-speed rail, especially in the Central Valley. He's been doing that for Cal Matters. Youssef, welcome.
Pleasure to be with you guys. Thank you.
Well, Dan, let me begin with you. Take us back. Tell us a story. Starting in 2008, when the voters passed that bond measure, what were they approving? What was the sentiment? I mean, why was there all this momentum to build this thing in the first place?
Well, I'm going to take you a little farther back than that. Back in the 1980s, there was serious talk about having a high-speed rail system in California. And by the late 90s, those early discussions had led to the formation of an agency. And in 2008, we had a ballot measure that was essentially to approve a $10 billion bond. A little less than $10 billion would actually go to the rail project to create this network that would run, you know, the real trunk line of it was San Francisco to Los Angeles, but also extensions well into Orange County and to Sacramento, eventually to San Diego. So it was a world-class system that was being sold. And the timeline, and I think Youssef did a masterful job of sort of pointing out maybe this is one of the flaws that's led to, you know, the discontent, I'll say, that we still see today, is that this was a system that was supposed to be running by 2020. And, of course, as you note, it's nowhere close to that.
Yeah. And the inspiration, did it come from, like, Japan? I mean, what was happening in the 80s that made this thing such an idea then?
Well, Japan is famous as the first nation to roll out a bullet train, right? They called it the Dream Super Express, right? It started construction in 1959, finished just before the opening of the Tokyo Olympics in 1964. It was an incredible feat for a nation that was still recovering from World War II to do this. And it was done with the intent of making a statement to the world about where it was at that moment. And, you know, in subsequent years, that, you know, most other Western societies are far more dependent on rail travel than the United States is. We were before World War II, and then after World War II and the rise of commercial aviation, fewer and fewer people were taking the trains. But if you look at England or France or Germany, those are all places that rail travel has been central. Of course, there are other places as well. But those nations developed high-speed rail. Très Grande Vitesse in France, I'm glad
nice.
I rode on it once. And it's fantastic. I've ridden on the Shinkansen in Japan. It's fantastic. And so when you see these things out there in the world and you have this natural travel corridor between San Francisco and Los Angeles, it's sort of an irresistible dream.
Yeah. Well, Youssef, you've been spending time in the Central Valley where part of this high-speed rail is actually being built. But, you know, what's your sense of the mood there generally? We'll get into the specifics. But that is a region with that has had a lot of opposition over the years.
I mean, it's one of those places that I think is feeling like they're having a moment. You know, this is our time, is something I heard from business owners, local officials, even project officials at the authority. They're really bullish about what's happening in the Central Valley. And I think there's good reason to believe them as well. I mean, we have state forecasters saying that the Central Valley will have as many as 5 million new residents by 2060. You know, we're seeing this migration shift from the pandemic that may have even been supercharged by it. That's now giving a lot of viability to housing, to schools, to businesses, to commuters who are suddenly thinking, you know what, like maybe I'll take a chance on that first time home in a place like the Central Valley. And I think what was most significant about the time I spent there was what I was hearing from folks in Chinatown. This is an area that has been neglected for generations, has been really a victim of urban sprawl and neglect over the years, and you know, some of the white flight to the outlying areas. And so they're finally seeing an opportunity because of high-speed rail with the new downtown station that's being built in Fresno. They're excited about hotels, housing, retail, nightlife, you know, the possibility of just more foot traffic in a place that's really been eager for it for a long time.
What do you see when you're down there, when you're near this rail project? What do you see?
It requires a bit of imagination, I would say. I mean, you're looking at an area that is definitely wearing the effects of the neglect, right? Shop alcoves where people are sleeping because it's just kind of a covered spot for the night, or cars that are, you know, there's evidence of folks living inside them, right? Just brimming with items, possessions to the windows. And a lot of the streets are just kind of vacant. Many of them are torn up right now because they're kind of in this in-between phase of tearing up the infrastructure beneath to build new ones and repair old one infrastructure that's already there. And so it requires you to sort of envision, I think, what a lot of these business owners there are envisioning, which is this future that looks very different from the reality they've been living in for decades.
But there are some, I don't know what you call them, Dan, help me, viaducts.
I mean, it's... It's one of the aspects of infrastructure that people kind of get excited about. And you don't necessarily have to be an infrastructure nerd to be excited about. So just north of town, for instance, and this has been in place for several years, there's a magnificent viaduct across the San Joaquin River coming into Fresno. And there's more and more of this infrastructure throughout the Central Valley. When we went down to see beautiful Lake Tulare, or Tulare Lake, after the floods in the spring, it just happened right outside of Corcoran, which was one of the towns under threat. There was a brand new viaduct and bridge being built for high-speed rail. And so there are dozens of places around the valley where this construction activity has been going on.
And Youssef, I know you talked to the mayor of Fresno, who's Republican, and he was very supportive. Do they see that as sort of like the frosting on the cake, or is that like fundamental to the revitalization of the Central Valley?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, you know, there's Jerry Dyer has this vision for 10,000 new residents to the downtown area. It's this number that he's kind of landed on as being a figure that represents, you know, foot traffic, enough of the population to sustain businesses and any sort of new investment that would come down there. But, you know, his politics are not necessarily what you'd sort of envision for a high-speed rail evangelist, right? Like, he's taken a lot of heat for his abortion stances. He's pro-choice. He's, you know, he was very critical of Hamas and was very pro-Israel when the conflict erupted there in the fall. And so he's not exactly kind of a high-speed rail proponent and kind of what we traditionally think of one, but he respects and I think appreciates the economic benefits. And he even told me that he doesn't want to be remembered as the mayor who sort of blew this opportunity to kind of have this economic revitalization that Fresno has been eager for so long.
Yeah, and I think, you know, whether you oppose the project from the beginning, if you're the mayor, like Ashley Swearingen was also the mayor earlier, she was also Republican, and my recollection is that she really did embrace the project because, you know, it's jobs, it's economic you know, money being infused into the economy. So it's hard to say no to that when you're in charge of the city. All right, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, more on California's beleaguered high-speed rail project. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We're talking with KQED's Dan Brecke and Yousef Beg of CalMatters about California's way behind schedule and over budget high-speed rail project. It's gotten nothing but criticism for years now, but there's more to the story from that, as Yousef has been writing. Yousef, what do you think? You mentioned Chinatown, and there being a lot of enthusiasm there in Fresno for that. But what about beyond that? I mean, and I'm thinking of growers. I mean, the Valley is known for agriculture, and growers, farmers, dairies, I mean, they were among the ones who sued to stop this thing. Is that now thing of the past?
No, I think, you know, some of the hardline opponents still tend to be in some of the rural areas of the Central Valley. And I think the authority deserves a lot of blame for some of that lack of political support there. You know, when the, as Dan knows, I mean, this project was kind of run by an army of consultants for a long time. And as a result of that, the sloppiness to which land acquisitions and some of the early political work that was needed there to get that buy-in, it just never materialized in a way that was good for the farmers and good for the growers. You had people who were waiting sometimes years to get a check cut for land that they sold or for you know, land that they were providing space for construction to. And so, you know, that caused a lot of really hard feelings. And those were people who could command the attention of political leaders in the area. And so those were a lot of those skeptical opinions you would hear in the Capitol and in other places when people were talking about that. They're saying, hey, my constituents are complaining about not getting paid by land acquisitions that are taking way too long to get completed. And so this is a lot of the stuff that the state auditor's office has laid out in some of the reports over the last 13 plus years, is that these consultants really didn't do a good job delivering on promises or being timely in the work they were doing.
And that sounds like, to me, Dan, a lot of wasted money and certainly wasted time. To what extent have those problems been fixed?
It's a little hard to tell. You know, I mean, one thing, and it's not confined to this one project. This is something that Yousef wrote about, that we have other examples of large projects, although none nearly as large as this one, where there are significant delays. But I think the biggest impact now is, and the biggest indicator we have about whether the ship has been righted, is the timeline. Right now, the guess is, I think, between 2030 and 2032, actual service will begin on that 171-mile corridor from Merced to Bakersfield. And I think to the extent that stays the case, that we don't have to wait longer than that, that's what you need to look at. And not so much the cost. It's going to cost a lot of money, and the cost is going to go up. I mean, it's almost inevitable given inflation and given the sort of the facts on the ground about what construction costs in California and around the world for big infrastructure.
Well, Yousef, I know you talked to Ray LaHood, who is a former Republican congressman from Illinois. He was the transportation secretary for President Barack Obama, and I believe they got some of that initial federal money from the Obama administration, from Congress. Can you just, we're going to hear a little clip, just set this up for us.
So Ray is one of these people that is really clear-eyed about the benefits of high-speed rail and kind of what it offers to the public. And I think, you know, when I talked to him, he was really trying to get across less so much like the cost and some of these other things that often tend to soak up all the oxygen in the conversation, but more just the reality of what this will mean for people when it's actually a part of their lives.
All right, let's listen.
The bottom line is, this is what the people want. And I believe that when California is finished, it will end up being a good investment. People will use it. It'll be oversubscribed, just like it is in Japan, just like it is in Europe, just like it is in China. This is what the people want.
Youssef, of course, it was what the people wanted when they voted for this, but there was opposition, including from Kevin McCarthy, who, you know, the former speaker, he for years tried to block any federal money for this. Vince Fong, his former district director, is now running for McCarthy's seat. He says, I don't even want this in my district. So is that, how relevant is that at this point?
I think it kind of shows some of the ways that, you know, partisanship dictates so much of this conversation. You know, Assemblyman Fong, you know, when I talked to him, he expressed a view that I almost was kind of stunned by, describing just how much he questioned whether they should be building in his own district in the first place. He was like, why not pick an urban center like Anaheim or somewhere, you know, in Southern California, while overlooking the fact that Fresno is the fifth largest city in California, or Bakersfield is one of the top 10 largest cities in California. And so these are urban centers, right? But he just, because he's so bound to this critical perspective, he even questions why it's happening in a place that might actually, you know, serve his constituents and benefit the cities that he represents.
Dan Brecky, you know, there were a lot of questions as to, you know, and jokes, frankly, as to why are we starting in the middle of the Central Valley? Who wants to take a train from Merced to Bakersfield and back? And why not do it from, you know, pick a place, you know, Orange County to L.A. or L.A. to San Diego, whatever. I know that wasn't part of the bond measure. But, you know, why did we start there?
Well, the bottom line reason is that there was a belief it would be easier to do there. The initial forays into looking at the north and southern, the northern and southern links of this, so the LA area and the San Francisco Bay Area, showed that there was going to be a battle over the route and how it was configured, and it would be much more difficult to engineer and much more expensive on both ends. I mean, Youssef's piece has a really cool animation from California High Speed Rail of what the train might look like going through tunnels in the Tehachapi.
Now we know where the money's going. It's on those animations.
Well, you know, they've always had good animations, and this one I recommend. It's really cool. but it would be those parts of the project, getting through the mountains there, and they have to go through two mountain ranges down there, and then there's, you know, population to the max everywhere you look when you get into those megalopolises. It's going to be difficult to do and very expensive. So the Central Valley was looked at as something where you would get the most for your money if you started there.
Yeah. Youssef, one of the things...
So the layer of economic justice too, right? Like, this was something that the Obama administration was super keen on coming out of the Great Recession. They were looking at where to put these grant dollars for high-speed rail, and they picked the Central Valley. They had grant proposals for Northern California, for Southern California, and they specifically chose the Central Valley, not just because it would be easier to build and to acquire land faster, but also because, hey, this is a place that needs some economic investment coming out of one of the worst, you know, recessions since the Great Depression.
One of the things I learned in your piece, surprised me, is that the environmental clearances from LA to San Francisco have been secured. What does that mean exactly, and how big a deal is that?
So it's a funny bureaucratic term to basically say that they've done the planning, but now it kind of gets to this like public process where it has to be approved and reviewed and go through sort of the typical processes we have for economic reviews on infrastructure. What it means is what it sort of triggers, right? What follows is design, land acquisition, construction. It's like this sort of sequencing of steps. And so the reason the authority is so excited about this, or they're so eager to tell folks about it, is because what happens now is more tangible than sort of the abstract bullet train. Is it coming? When is it happening? It's like, no, now it's actually going to be designed. They're going to be able to go buy the land where they're going to build specifically, and then they can actually start the work to build it.
Dan, also in December, when this $3.1 billion for California was announced, I think it was another $6 billion was announced to build a high-speed rail from Las Vegas near L.A.
Right.
How does that figure into this? Is it going to complement it? Is it going to in some way upend it?
It was actually $3 billion for both projects. So $3.1 billion for high-speed rail, the state project, and $3 billion for this project going from Rancho Cucamonga to near Las Vegas, or right into the center of Las Vegas. And that's a project to watch very closely. They have a very aggressive timeline. They have a working high-speed line. I don't think it amounts to bullet train status yet in Florida. You know, I guess my feeling about it is they have chosen an easier route. They're going to use the median of Interstate 15 most of the way, which is easy compared to what to everything that's happening in the California high speed.
They've already got the right of way.
Yes, exactly. So I think the thing to be aware of there is if they pull something off where they have high speed rail service from, you know, not really downtown LA but close to Las Vegas, and they do it by the end of the decade, that's going to make people really take another look at whether high speed rail, the state project, should be moving much faster than it is and what it would take to do that.
Yousef, real quick, last thought from you. How optimistic are you that the date you put in your story, 2026, is the day that we're actually going to be able to ride on that train in the Central Valley?
I'm cautiously optimistic, but so much of this, as you guys know, comes down to the politics in D.C. And if federal funding doesn't come in, it's not going to be able to connect to the urban centers and the coast. And so for this project to actually deliver on what it's saying to folks, it's going to need support from Washington, D.C., and it's going to need more political support from leaders in California.
Well, and as we know, Donald Trump, when he was president, tried to claw back $1 billion or so and was unsuccessful. But if he gets reelected, well, it's not just high-speed rail, but there's going to be a lot of problems for California, I would imagine. All right, we are going to leave it there. Yousef Baig from CalMatters, KQED's own Dan Brecky, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And that is a wrap for Tuesday, January 30th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Jim Bennett, and our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.